And temperatures 9 degrees Celsius, that's 48 Fahrenheit, and is around about average for the time of year. In Wales, the cloud will be thick enough to give us a few spots of rain around the Cardigan Bay area first thing. That rain tending to ease off during the afternoon. The sky's turning a bit brighter. Highs of 8 degrees here. In Northern Ireland, chance of a few spots of rain for eastern counties first thing. Otherwise, it's going to be a dry day with a variable cloud, a few bright spells and a freshening southerly breeze. Highs of 10 degrees here. And in Scotland, there will be some light rain or drizzle affecting western coasts and hills for the morning. This tending to peter out gradually through the day with the best of any bright or sunny spells to the north and east. Highs of around 6 or 7 Celsius. That's the weather. Arlene.
Thank you, Chris. Now on Radio 4, our Book of the Week continues with Andrew Wilson's new biography of the early life of American writer Sylvia Plath. The 22-year-old Plath is recovering after a suicide attempt and several months of psychiatric treatment, but she's determined to pursue her literary and romantic ambitions. Hayley Atwell reads Mad Girl's Love Song by Andrew Wilson. Sylvia Plath's words are read by Sasha Pick.
On the 27th of January 1954, at the Smith faculty meeting, the staff voted that Sylvia Plath be allowed to return to college. Certainly, Plath saw language, and specifically poetry, as part of her regeneration. In February, she sent boyfriend Gordon Lemaire Dirge in Three Parts, the first poem she had written since the spring of 1953. In just 12 lines, the poem, a satire dripping with black humour, alludes to Adam and Eve, Alice in Wonderland, The Wizard of Oz, Dante, and John Bunyan. Although Sylvia saw Dr. Booth, Smith's psychiatrist, once a week, in her own mind she thought she had completely recovered from her breakdown. She wrote to her mother,
I have no psychological problems, actually, so our discussions are more philosophical than anything else.
In April, Sylvia met a man who would help free her of her conventional morality, liberate her sexually, and expand her intellectual horizons. Richard Sassoon, a senior at Yale, did not match her physical ideal. Yet, from the moment they met, Sylvia felt challenged and stimulated by him. His aesthetic sense was so finely tuned that it pained him to see or experience anything that did not match his high standards of beauty. He told Sylvia in a letter,
When you've seen a moving forest of classical columns, you do not wish to walk down the streets of New Haven. And when you have lived the beauty of Mallarmé, you do not wish to read Sandburg.
Sassoon also confessed to a propensity to depression.
I've tried to hide it. But you must know this of me. I see strange visions in my depressions, and I am impetuous, and I wish my will done immediately, because there is a constant fear of an end in me.
Plath would have been told to try to take it easy on leaving the infirmary, but she did not follow the medic's advice. She started to behave with renewed intensity and dyed her hair platinum blonde. At the beginning of May, Sassoon invited her to New York City. The couple checked into a hotel on 44th Street, where they spent the majority of their time in bed. Sylvia confessed in a letter that she had slept for only 2 hours that Saturday night, an indication that she had, most probably, finally consummated her relationship with Sassoon. Sylvia was so tired that, on the journey home, she slept on the back seat of Richard's car.
You will never know how wonderful I feel when you say I make you happy. It is so much better than being a god. I love you, darling.
Plath returned home to Wellesley to find her mother in poor health. Aurelia still had problems with a duodenal ulcer, and in early June, Sylvia wrote to Gordon Lemaire to tell him how worried she was about her mother. Writing about herself in the third person, she said,
I am a girl who hopes that she will grow like a bamboo tree, but not stab anyone that happens to be tied up nearby because she would rather lose a lot than hurt someone.
Sylvia had long dreamt of travelling to Europe. On arrival at Smith, she found that girls from wealthier families were always talking about their vacations in Europe, while all three of her serious boyfriends, Dick Norton, Gordon Lemaire, and Richard Sassoon, had spent months on the continent. Europe represented many things to Sylvia. independence from her mother, a chance to connect with her family's Germanic and Austrian roots, and an opportunity to situate herself within the tradition of American authors such as T.S. Eliot and Henry James, who had chosen to leave their homeland and live as exiles. It seems that the idea of applying for a Fulbright scholarship first occurred to her in May 1952, when she heard that an English major at Smith had received the award. 3 days later, she wrote in her journal,
"I will still whip myself onward and upward in this spinning world, who knows which is up, toward Fulbrights, prizes, Europe, publication, mails."
Plath realized that despite receiving glowing academic references, nothing her tutors at Smith said could gloss over her period of absence from the college between September 1953 and February 1954. She decided to ask her former therapist, Ruth Boysha, for a reference. The decision was a masterstroke of preemption, as Sylvia knew that her therapist's report would assuage any doubts about her mental instability. In her letter of reference, Boysha defined Plath's psychotherapy as a success. Yet, by her own admission, psychiatrist and patient had seen each other for only 12 sessions since Sylvia had left McLean. In some respects, it seems as though Plath, the consummate actress, duped Boysha into believing that she was well, and Boysha let herself be duped. Gordon LeMayer said that he would do everything in his power to wait for her. After the couple went to see a production of Portrait of a Lady in Boston, Gordon wrote,
"I see you as a Jamesian heroine, like Isabel Archer being exposed to life. When you prophesy a hard future if we ever get married, you do not exaggerate. I love you, I love all of you, and your thorns are the best part of you."
During the late part of 1954 and early 1955, as she continued to date him, she refused to tell Gordon the truth about her feelings for Sassoon. Perhaps Sylvia justified her behaviour because she knew that Gordon was, at least for the foreseeable future, married to the Navy. In early 1955, he was due to set sail for Cuba. In mid-February, Sylvia heard that she had been accepted by Newnham College, Cambridge, on a 2-year BA honours course. In the few months before her graduation from Smith, Plath seemed supercharged by success. She received the news that she had been awarded the Alpha Award for Creative Writing from Smith's English department and a letter from Edward Weeks at Atlantic Monthly informing her that the prestigious literary magazine admired her poems The Dispossessed, Insolent Storm Strikes at the Skull, and Circus in Three Rings. Then, on the 20th of May, Sylvia received what she had been waiting for. News that she had won a Fulbright. On the 1st of October 1954, Sylvia Plath arrived in Cambridge and fell immediately in love with the city. Her letters to her mother Aurelia and her friends in America overflow with enthusiasm and a keen sense of promise. She was creating herself anew. Sassoon had won a place at the Sorbonne, and Sylvia soon realised just how much she missed him. The boys at Cambridge, although equal in age, just could not measure up to Richard. On the 11th of December, Sylvia wrote Richard a letter in which she pleaded for his support to help guide her through a psychological crisis. She outlined how she carried about with her an enormous sorrow.
"With as many facets as a fly's eye, and I must give birth to this monstrosity before I am light again. I feel now as if I were building a very delicate, intricate bridge, quietly in the night, across the dark from one grave to another while the giant is sleeping. Help me build this oh-so-exquisite bridge."
Sylvia explained her problems to Olive Higgins Prouty in more straightforward terms in a letter she wrote on the 13th of December. Her biggest problem, she told Prouty, was a realisation that she could not be perfect. Now that she occupied an arena that did not monitor success by the endowment of various prizes, she felt unsure and uncertain of her own abilities.
"The constant struggle in mature life, I think, is to accept the necessity of tragedy and conflict, and not to try to escape to some falsely simple solution, which does not include these more somber complexities. Sometimes I wonder if I'm strong enough to meet this challenge.
In early February, Sylvia wrote in her journal,
I need a father. I need a mother. I need some older, wiser being to cry to. I feel like Lazarus. That story has such a fascination. Being dead, I rose up again, and even resort to the mere sensation value of being suicidal, of getting so close, of coming out of the grave with the scars and the marring mark on my cheek, which, is it my imagination, grows more prominent.
On Friday, the 24th of February, Plath bought a copy of St. Boltoff's Review. Ted Hughes's poems were strong and blasting like a high wind in steel girders. When Sylvia met Ted at the St. Boltoff's Review party on the 25th of February, she found Hughes's physical presence just as overwhelming. Within minutes of meeting, Ted kissed Sylvia hard on the mouth and ripped the hairband from her head. In turn, Plath bit Hughes on the cheek, drawing blood. Soon after the party, she realised that Hughes was
the one man since I've lived who could blast Richard.
2 days later, she wrote Pursuit, a Blakean poem about the dark forces of lust and her encounter with Hughes. The quotation at the beginning of the poem was taken from Racine's Phèdre, Dans le fond de forêt, votre image me suit. In the depths of the forest, your image follows me. A line that Plath said summarised the relationship between passion and death.
It is, of course, a symbol of the terrible beauty of death and the paradox that the more intensely one lives, the more one burns and consumes oneself.
On the 1st of March, 5 days after meeting Hughes, she wrote Sassoon a letter in which she begged him to free herself from him.
For I must get my soul back from you. I am killing my flesh without it.
Sylvia decided to travel to Paris to see Sassoon. On the 23rd of March, Sylvia and Ted spent the night together in London. The next day, still smarting from the fact that Ted had awoken at 5 in the morning and called her Shirley, the name of one of his girlfriends, Sylvia set off for France. She had prepared a speech to win over Richard, and she felt in a good mood. But when the concierge emerged and told her Sassoon was not at home, he was in Spain and would not return until after Easter, her spirits plummeted. She wrote in her journal,
I had been ready to bear a day or two alone, but this news shook me to the roots. Never before had a man gone off to leave me to cry after.
Plath's feelings for Sassoon were so intense that had Richard taken the decision to stay in Paris, it's highly probable that she would never have returned to England to marry Hughes. Sylvia knew that she was nearing what she called a historic moment. Should she devote herself to Richard, Gordon, or Ted? If Sassoon returned from Spain, she would, she said, fall into his arms. Le Maire was, she knew, no longer an option for her. That meant there was, in her mind, only one man for her. Ted Hughes. In April, Plath sent a letter to Richard Sassoon asking him never to write to her again, as she was engaged to Ted Hughes. The couple married on the 16th of June 1956, 4 months after that first meeting.
Hayley Atwell was reading from Mad Girl's Love Song by Andrew Wilson. Sylvia Plath was played by Sasha Pick, Richard Sassoon by Will Howard, and Gordon Lemire by Ben Crowe. The book was abridged by Miranda Davis and produced by Emma Harding. And Sylvia Plath's novel The Bell Jar is next week's book at bedtime. You can hear that on Monday to Wednesday. Now, just before the shipping forecast, some sailing by. This is BBC Radio 4, and now the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015 on Saturday the 16th of February. There are warnings of gales in Fitzroy, Seoul, Shannon, Rockall and South East Iceland. The general synopsis at 1800. Highs, Western France, 1025 and Trafalgar, 1022, both losing their identities by 1800 Saturday. New low expected Germany, 1022 by same time. The area forecast for the next 24 hours. West Viking, southerly or southwesterly, 4 or 5, increasing 6 or 7 for a time. Fair than rain, good, occasionally poor later. East Viking, north at 0, southerly 5 to 7, perhaps gale 8 later, occasional rain, moderate or good, occasionally poor later. South at 0, north at 0, 40s. Southeasterly 4 or 5,